Thank you for your welcome to Nethy Bridge Church. Nethy Bridge is a place we've been coming to regularly on holiday since 1990. And so for that reason, it's a place of relaxation, of kind of comfort and enjoyment. And I've had the opportunity in the past to preach at Nethy Bridge Church, and I'm really appreciative of this opportunity once again today. The passage that we're looking at in Luke 11 is quite a tough passage. It's all about Jesus going to the home of a Pharisee who invites him for dinner. And I'm sure that's the sort of situation that we might quite enjoy or be excited by, the idea of inviting Jesus to our homes for dinner. And we might be imagining the scenario in Bethany where Mary, Martha, and Lazarus would have Jesus and his disciples on a regular basis. And they were friends. And so the conversation was easy and entertaining and probably fun. You know, there's quite a lot of laughter as well. Or alternatively, maybe the story of Zacchaeus, where Jesus himself asked to come back to his home for dinner. And Zacchaeus, who of course was a main tax collector in the area, hated by the local community, his life was transformed through that encounter. He changed and became a much more generous man. And so these might be the sort of things or events that we're kind of imagining our dinner engagement with Jesus would be like. You know, whereas in this passage, the kind of response of Jesus to his host, perhaps, and his other guests, who were other Pharisees and some scribes, teachers of the law, is less than comfortable. In fact, it's bordering on kind of offense and insulting, and not at all the way one would normally react as a guest in the home of a host back in the first century. And in this context, Jesus meets or addresses mainly, first of all, the Pharisees. And the Pharisees, as you will know, was a strict Jewish religious sect, very highly trained in the law. And the more important Pharisees, the more influential ones, were part of the Sanhedrin, which was the ruling council of the Jews, and the body who would eventually lead to his conviction and death. And to these folks, the Pharisees, he pronounces the word woe three times. He also at one point calls them fools in the way they were operating. And he says woe to them because he identifies that they have wrong motives. Although they appear all good and nice and pure and doing all the right things on the outside in respect to the law, inside he says, actually, you're really very greedy and wicked because actually, you know, pride is in there. I see pride and all sorts of other bad things which are not evident on the outside. And there are times when Jesus calls them hypocrites in other passages, which would incorporate that kind of approach to life. And so for them, the outside, making the outside look good was important, but they didn't work so hard on the inside. And the second thing he pronounces a woe on them is their kind of focus on the small things in life and ignoring the big issues. So, you know, he explains the illustration he uses of their tithing. You know, they tithe even the smallest little herbs. You know, they make sure that they give 10% and probably make sure that people see that they have given that 10%. But issues like justice, they ignore. And they connect very little with the love for God. And that's reflected in the way that they operate with other people, the ordinary people in the street. They really don't love those people, and they're not motivated to give them justice. Now, their third woe concerns their reputation against the reality of what they're really like. So their main concern is for their reputation in the community amongst each other. And, they're keen to maintain that reputation and not allow it to be damaged in any way by anyone or anything. But the reality is, Jesus says, you're like unmarked graves. People might be impressed by what they see, but actually being near you is being like near to an unmarked grave. And of course, graves and dead bones and all these sort of things would make you unclean normally. But they give this impression that they are clean, holy, and pure. So that was the Pharisees. And then there was the scribes, or teachers of the law. And these were professional men, would-be men, who had authority in interpreting the Jewish law and its traditions. So they were specialists in that area of explaining for everyone else, or describing or interpreting the laws carefully. And they too, they say, well, you've insulted us too. One of them says, you've insulted us too by what you say. But then Jesus goes on and specifically insults them further with some very clear specifics aimed at them directly. And the first one is that he says, woe to you, because you actually add to the weight of the law. You add kind of burdens on the people rather than bringing light and explanation. You actually muddy the water in terms of the law. The second woe is because of their attitude to the prophets from the past, and this is going to kind of overflow into their action towards prophets in their present day. And so they claim they admire the prophets of old, they admire prophets today like John the Baptist, but really underneath they would rather have them dead. And he kind of connects them with their predecessors, their forefathers, and said, well, they murdered, those prophets that were murdered in the past were murdered by people that were your predecessors. And there's a kind of implication here, because Jesus mentions the apostles too, that actually they're going to be gunning for the apostles, all of whom, apart from John, were killed, didn't have a natural death. And it would be people like the scribes who would be involved in their murder. And that would include Jesus, who, of course, was the greatest prophet ever to come to our world. And then the third thing, he says, you hinder the people rather than helping the people. And he specifically mentions this, this key to knowledge, which they've obscured or lost or hidden away. And we kind of wonder, well, what is that key to knowledge? And I'll maybe speak about that a little bit later. But essentially, of course, it is Jesus. Now, Albert Einstein, the famous physicist from last century, is accredited by some in terms of defining insanity. What he said, what is insanity? And he said, it's doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And that essentially is what the Pharisees and the teachers of the law were doing. They were doing the same things over and over again and expecting different results, because like it would just be the same. The spiritual health of the nation, the spiritual health of themselves wasn't improving. In fact, it was going downwards because they continued to do the same things over and over again. And now this word that's translated woe in the English comes from the Greek ouai, which is an exclamation of grief on Jesus' part. And it can have a positive dimension, so it'd be kind of be a kind of compassionate sense to it of sorrow for their condition. But there could be a kind of negative side too, you know, in terms of, well, there's an uncompromising sense of doom coming to these people because of the way that they act and speak. And so the woe is kind of uncovering their sin. It's identifying the sins, which Jesus was quite specific about. And it contains a call to repentance. And there are examples of Pharisees who supported and pursued Jesus, were attracted to him, and one assumes became believers themselves, people like Nicodemus, who came to him at night in John chapter 3, and Joseph of Arimathea, who helped Nicodemus later on to bury his body. And we might wonder, well, who in our world would fit this kind of category today of Pharisees and teachers of the law? And we might think it's Trump or Putin. You know, these are people that seem to do crazy stuff and seem to be more putting burdens on people than helping them because of their pursuit of power and conflict in the world, which is harming so many. And we're reminded here, of course, this woe is a reminder by Jesus as well of God's ultimate victory, you know, which is very relevant to Donald Trump and to Vladimir Putin. But what about us? How does this speak to us? Because it does have a message for us too. You know, have we, like the Pharisees and the scribes in the past, who have made keeping the law and following Judaism unappealing? Have we, in the church, made Christianity unappealing to the ordinary people? The people that are not in the church, so they're not attracted to come into the church. You know, does this speak in to us? And I felt it appropriate to kind of mention an expression I came across some years ago under the title 4A Christianity. And it actually came out of the London Institute of Contemporary Christianity, which was started by John Stott, but of course more recently has been under the kind of leadership of Mark Green and others since John Stott's death. And this particular expression came from Mark Green. 4A Christianity. I don't know if you find the alliteration helps. I don't always find it does, because I can never kind of quite remember the fourth one. I can remember three, but I can never remember the fourth. But the 4 A's of Christianity are the first, which is particularly relevant here, is authenticity. Because, you know, we should seek in the church, and I think we've not always succeeded in this, to avoid the type of hypocrisy we see in these men that Jesus is challenging here. And, you know, we should be seeking out to present Christianity as a way, a genuine way of life, living out of love rather than living out of fear. Not being a concerned about our reputations, but actually being more concerned that we're presenting the reality of how things are and how we are as well. And so that's the first day, you know, having an authentic way of living out our faith. The second is the word agape, which of course means sacrificial love and service. It's the love that Jesus demonstrated in his life here on earth. And agape love is right at the very heart of who God is. And this word really would be taking seriously that agape love of God and seeking to reflect it to others, and his justice and compassion and mercy for other people out in our world. And so the church should be displaying agape love itself. And it should also be, the third A is adventure. You know, maybe for some of us, church has become comfortable and familiar, and outside it's a bit scary and there's all sorts of kind of crazy things going on, and we can see these on our television screens. And it struck me that the trip that the astronauts have made on Artemis 2, just in the last week or so, going back up to the moon. You know, I still think, you know, they beat the record of Apollo 13 in terms of the distance they've traveled, but they haven't yet matched the event in 1969, which was the first time men and humanity stepped foot on the moon. And that's planned for Artemis 4 in 2028, I think. But that's not yet been reached. But the four astronauts who went on the trip this past week were going outside their comfort zones. I'm sure you would think that being strapped to a rocket with the incredible propulsion power that it had would not be a comfortable experience. They were prepared to tread on unfamiliar paths. And I think that that's what the church needs to do. We need to get outside our comfort zones, tread unfamiliar paths. And it's good to see that, you know, you have changed the seating here in Nethy Bridge Church. You've removed the pews, which have been in the church for presumably quite a long time, and you've replaced it with comfortable seating. Not that we're wanting to be comfortable, but we're wanting to make the church welcoming and comfortable for those coming in from outside. And so you are prepared to embrace change, which I think is always a good thing. And thank you to the band for introducing us to some new songs, because there's always good new songs out there coming out from Christian singer-songwriters in these days. So that's the third A. The fourth A is awe. You know, we need to gain a revelation of the reality of the sovereignty and the power of God. And that should lead us into a kind of fear and respect of Him, I think, much more than we have at the moment. And that's partly, you know, what it moves into in Luke chapter 12, the very next passage. Now, I don't want to steal anything from Graham Atkinson, who's your minister, who's coming to speak next week, and that will be his subject. But the first few verses mention the importance of fearing God, who can destroy both our body and soul in Gehenna, the fire of hell. And also in that early passage of Luke, it talks about the reaction of the people to Jesus. And this is where I think we see him represented as the key of knowledge. They were falling over themselves to hear Jesus. They were really excited to hear what he had to say, and a very different reaction to that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. And just as I finish, you know, that in a sense is Jesus clearly being portrayed, I think, as the key to knowledge. And the ordinary people recognized that. The scribes and the Pharisees, the influential leaders of the time, did not, on the whole. But I was interested in this phrase, key to knowledge, and I kind of searched in the Bible and to see where else those words appeared. And there's only one other passage in the Bible where it does appear. They do appear is in Isaiah 33, verses 5 to 6. And these words are there. When I read it, it just seemed to be appropriate in terms of finishing off what I'm going to say today. If we could all say these two verses, proclaim them together. And they're up on the screen there for you. The Lord is exalted, for he dwells on high. He will fill Zion with his justice and righteousness. He will be the sure foundation for your times, a rich store of salvation and wisdom and knowledge. And the fear of the Lord is the key to this treasure. And so there it speaks about a kind of key to not just knowledge, but wisdom and salvation as well. And, you know, the key to that is the fear of the Lord. In a sense, that's speaking about Jesus. Because in a sense, we identify him with that aspect of God's character too. So thank you for your invitation to come and preach today, and I look forward to that opportunity again in the future. And God bless you as you go into the rest of this week.